Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday, May 6th, 2016. This is Jeff Dunphy, and we are retooling for our coming of age. We've been chatting about the art and science of self-discovery, and we continue that with episode 11 today. And we're now going to start to put together some of the pieces. We're going to chat a little about Earth. We're going to chat a little about the evolution of mankind. We're going to chat a little about some of the delusions that we've been carrying on. We're going to chat about expanding our capacity to entertain more than one perspective at the same time. And in keeping with that, I want to chat a little about the challenges that the Earth is having and the reason these challenges are happening. So now I want to talk about possibly putting things together, right? Now, there is talk and there is sociological observation that this is the time of revelation. And while it may not be unfolding as some of the fundamentalist Christians would have us see, it may be unfolding in a manner which is divinely directed and perfectly on time, as some would say. So it's possible right now that humanity can make a significant collective breakthrough in its consciousness, particularly at the dawn of this new age, which we've been calling the Aquarian Age. The Piscean Age is ending and leaving, and this is the age of believing. This is the age when you would sit at the feet of the rabbi or of the priest or of the imam, and you'd ask them to do your thinking for you. We are evolving out of that and shall continue to evolve out of that so that this time of knowing manifests itself more fully. So, until fairly recently, mankind has been playing with the conquering mode or the conquering modality, and his predisposition towards things is that he has to overcome it or conquer it. And, you know, various domains that he needs to conquer or dominate, needs to control and exploit the planet, right? And there's an aspect of mind called the analytic mind that has been used in order to facilitate that. Okay, so analytic mind works pretty well for these strategies of conquest. So, but in bringing the full force of creative mind towards our time of revelation or enlightenment, that linear modality of analytics leaves enormous holes in the grander excursion of the mind. For one thing, analytic mind functions best when independently extended, which makes the notion of a global community or of a collectivism, the three C's we talk about here in the Lamassery and here at Retooling, are collectivism, collaboration, and cooperation. So the whole concept of those three C's becomes a little hard for the analytic mind to grasp. So analytic mind at some point in time plays into the question, is this all there is? Kind of reminds us of Jack Nicholson in the movie As Good As It Gets, right? So we're in this place where the Earth is compromised. The planet is compromised. Mother Earth is doing all kinds of weird things. Tornadoes are happening. Earthquakes are happening. Volcanoes are erupting. The Ring of Fire in Asia is happening. We've got Mother Earth going, my goodness, something is happening and shifting and changing. And the oceans are compromised. You then have the economy compromised, where the 1% of the 1% now have most of the wealth. This domination of greed is ever present, and it is, in one space, it is quite disgusting. Okay, that so the old domination mindset needs to be shifted or changed or left behind. Okay, so now let's pay attention to this domination mindset, and let's also pay attention to Mother Earth and Mother Nature. Okay, so if you look at Mother Nature, You realize quite quickly that domination isn't part of her game plan, right? We, as humans, have come to believe that domination is necessary and needed. We need to conquer. We need to conquer Mother Nature. We need to conquer a bunch of stuff. But in truth, There are no examples, to the best of my knowledge, can be found in either the plant or the animal kingdoms to substantiate that presence that they need to dominate, right? So elephants don't dominate zebras, even though the elephants possibly could, but they certainly don't attempt to. And even predators, while they feed the animals or the cheetahs or whatever, while they feed on them, they don't grow them as livestock. So the levels of cruelty demonstrated by mankind since the rise of the analytic, or we may want to call this the egocentric mind, are categorically unknown in other species. So this relational difference between how humans interact with the world versus how the animal kingdom interacts is directly attributable to this egocentric, personality-based aspect of greed. And I think greed is run amok, as we've said often. And consequently, I think that needs to change in order for this time of revelation to manifest itself more fully. So an animal, a lion or a tiger or whatever, might appear to be quite greedy when they're very hungry. However, when they're not hungry anymore, it's a non-issue. Imagine the bears in Alaska, where you see all these videotapes on YouTube and the like. You see these bears, you know, when they're full, they don't care if a photographer's right there 4 feet from their face, because they're happy and they're fed and they're sated. Okay. So, and it's, you know, in the case of food, it's very unusual for a wild animal to take more than meets its immediate needs. Now, there are times when a leopard or a jaguar will pull a kill into a tree because it knows it can feed on it for a while. However, when the stomach's full, they walk away from the leftovers generally, and that's when they feed the rest of the chain, right? So that is the natural system. Now, when a culture or a planet, you know, there's aspects of our planet where they haven't lost touch with the needs of the planet, but when a culture loses touch with the needs of its planet, of Mother Earth, and forgets its duty to care for the planet upon which it dwells, oftentimes Mother Earth facilitates a natural disaster, so that once again attention can be brought to or focused on the relationship of Mother Earth, Mother Nature, and the culture. A cataclysm, earthquake, whatever, one of the few mechanisms by which this domination mentality can actually be overridden. We really do have no power over a volcano that blows into the atmosphere and they create clouds for years, or an earthquake that happens and devastates towns and cities, as we've seen in Japan and we just saw in Ecuador. Now, catastrophes as such usually facilitate a reorganization of our priorities and consequently bring together people who might otherwise be less preoccupied with the three C's: collaboration, cooperation, and collectivism. So the experience of a catastrophe draws these people together, and they are able to experience those connections, the three C's. So when life is good, on the other hand, and when they're feeding their greed or their stalking their hordes, right? We get a bit imbalanced, okay? And when you feel superior to one's neighbors or see through the lens of having and haves or have-nots, the seeds of domination are starting to sprout. And if this way of seeing is accepted by a generation after another, eventually this creates a disconnected state. And this disconnected state flies in the face of the three C's, replacing this aspect of genuine community. So it's only in this exaggerated belief in disconnection that one individual seeks to hurt another, for the perceived other is having no shared energetic connection to themselves. There's a phrase that Saint Germain brings to bear, and we use it often in the Lamasery, and it's, if they knew better, they would do better. And there's another idiom that we use, and it's, as go we, so go I. And this is a very important idiom to embrace and remember. Okay. So one of the problems with this projected false notion of separation or independence it often leaves people with no real sense of purpose, with no shared community into which their life purpose can be moved or directed or driven. So individuals who maintain this isolationist construct often feel no sense of mission or soul purpose. Now, as you investigate a little more deeply, there arises a more truthful understanding of the collective assignments. Because there are so many life forms existing on Earth, there must be something that connects them all. And it becomes obvious that this connection holds a relational component to Mother Nature. So clearly, this habituated projection of collective ego mind regarding the illusion of separation needs to be healed. If Earth is to take healing from the wounds she has suffered over the course of her history. And these would be called sacred wounds when you allow them to be used to let go of the old story and to embrace the new in your spiritual evolution. Now, the Asgo Wiso Goai and the Three Seas, it speaks to a story. It's an ancient Hindu tradition that's very instructive right now, and it's called the Diamond Net of Indra. Now, when one wanted to speak of vastness in ancient times, they used relatively small numbers, you know, the tunes of 10,000 or so, but perhaps the number 10,000 isn't appropriate. Maybe it's 10 billion or 10 trillion or 10 quadrillion, but the story goes there, every single star, every single atom, every single aspect of the universe are all joined together by a kind of web or a net composed of such fine filaments that cannot be seen by the human eye. However, it's delicate, but it's also incredibly strong, and consequently, every aspect of the universe is connected. And this comes to us from the Hermetic principles. It comes to us from time immemorial. Okay? Now, while this filament is indestructible, and even though it cannot be seen, it sparkles like a diamond. And that's the Indra net. Now, when we play any part of this net, when it experiences the vibration of domination or subjugation, or separation, this whole net is forced to replicate that flow along all of its filaments. So such would apply to any energetic frequency, whether it's greed or hatred or intolerance or so on. So it affects everything. So now let's start to think about these mindsets and how they can become quite derogatory to the evolution of mankind. Okay. So let's consider the moment of the reductionism in the scientific method. This we park into the analytic mindset. Okay. So Newtonian physics, which is at least partially responsible for the exaggeration of the analytic mind, tends to reduce everything down to its least common denominator. Now, you know, this is viable enough in some settings to facilitate certain aspects, launch a rocket or a planet or a, you know, whatever, a plane, but it doesn't reveal any qualitative information as to living one's life, experiencing personal growth, nor witnessing spiritual transformation. Douglas Baker talks wonderfully about the three aspects that transcend analytic mind in its truth, beauty, and goodness. And those are really an important trinity, if you will, to recognize that another aspect of mind needs to be utilized in order to appreciate and embrace and acknowledge them. So the mentality of reductionism necessitates a very linear way of thinking. And that analytic mindset propagates the notion of I as the basic reality and keeps object and subject perpetually separate. Now, while reductionism opens the door to scientific investigation, what really needs to be done is we need to entertain modalities where we can begin to comprehend the workings of the universe. Now, the view that all things within the material realm are unequivocally separate from all other things provides this false belief or basis for most of the Western sciences. And until quantum physics pitched up, most people just embraced this, okay? Now, as the universe and all of its pieces were viewed in terms of separateness, it seemed an obvious fact that humanity should be understood in the same manner. So we learn how to manifest and how to change and manipulate material stuff. But over time, the Western scientists couldn't ignore Mother Nature. So one of the things that happens inside Mother Nature is you start to realize that Mother Nature maintains within it a wisdom that is so profound and so magic and is so awe-inspiring that science can't ignore it for too long, okay? So when science starts to embrace this and starts to allow two aspects of mind to come to bear, we start to extricate ourselves from our identification with our ego, and we start to acknowledge that greed and separateness will work against us. Now, I want to talk a little about the limitations of analytic mind and the whole analytic perspective, and the part of the Jack Nicholson movie As Good As It Gets, right? I mean, the human development in that aspect, we are as analytically bright as we are, and this is the concept that evolution is linear as opposed to cyclic. So the proposition that human development has reached its pinnacle and whatever happens to humans collectively from here on in will be little more than interesting permutations of what now exists. So physical reality is seen as the basic or primary reality, which is not necessarily drawn from any other reality, because from this perspective, it's basically useless to worry about future generations inhabiting the planet, since the planet will soon be completely depleted and unable to support life. Now, the problem, of course, with this version of reality rests in the fact that because every part of life is viewed as an extension of the physical realm, all kinds of other levels, other multidimensional levels, are completely excluded from that sense of being. Okay. Now, this proposition at least partially understands the magnitude of the depression that is afflicting so many of us at this current time. It may also be a significant underpinning force to the emphasis the whole tactic of materialism plays in this developed world today. Now, one of the excluded levels of consciousness that we're going to introduce now from the analytic, we could call it contemplative. Now, contemplative mind is a state of consciousness that moves readily into the mysteries and within the faculties of perceptions unknown to analytic mind. It extricates you from the box of analytic mind. Now, contemplative mind is not threatened in the absence of linear, logical answers to the big questions. In fact, it's neither influenced by nor impressed with the reductionist, rational, analytic mind demands. Contemplative mind requires no analytic distance between the perceiver and the experience. And while offering something analytic mind would find principally intangible, the activities of contemplative mind can both nurture and sustain the soul, this genius that resides within you. Now, contemplative mind is the ground of being for the mystic, functioning in a matter more akin to a hologram than goal-directed two-dimensional linearity. Whereas analytic mind can describe experiences, contemplative mind responds to what we might term as the alive presence within an experience. Now, contemplative mind both understands and relates to the presence of the numinous. Now, let me sort of expand on numinous for you so you get... Okay, so something numinous has sort of a religious quality, not necessarily just religious, but suggesting the presence of a divine power. So when you enter into a temple or a church or a mosque or a synagogue or whatever, you might feel as though you've entered into a numinous space. And it comes from the Latin word meaning divine power. And this word also comes from pneuman, which is a word used to describe the spirit or divine characteristic. Now, you don't have to be strictly religious to experience something numinous. You might see the beauty of a... You've seen these laneways or roadways in... I mean, I've experienced them in France.